This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Talking the talk with head, tongue and toe. Walking the walk. Education can be so awkward. Spotlight on Academics We Know.
Kia ora, Heidi Mai, and welcome to Spotlights on Academics We Know, the podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Buckingham, in Otapoti, Dunedin. Join me for conversations with lecturers, researchers, and practitioners about contemporary challenges, ideas, and potential opportunities for education and upskilling. Learning can be awkward. We aim to normalize the discomfort of being at the edge of new knowledge. This is so awkward. Kieran Carson is a senior lecturer and the program coordinator for the Diploma of Youth Work at Te Pukenga Otago Polytechnic. Kieran lived in Japan for 4 years working as an English teacher. She's worked as a primary teacher and a youth worker in Melbourne for 15 years. Kieran is focused on developing her capacity as tangata tiriti to support the decolonization of education and community. She is interested in trauma-informed support in residential services and youth work. Kia ora, Kieran. How are you?
Kia ora, Adrian. I'm good, thank you.
It's so nice.
It's a little weird to be sitting here getting recorded.
It's weird to have microphones, but yeah. I think it's really nice that you agreed to do this, so thank you.
Welcome.
I appreciate this.
It's normally, also a little weird to sit across from you looking at you in your face.
From very serious eye contact, because there's normally like a cubicle wall and two computers, and I just shout over the top at
you. Totally.
And now we're going to have some serious time together.
Eye contact, central.
Yeah. I'll just look over here for a second. So let's start off by just a bit of an introduction. Who are you, Kieran Carson?
Indeed. Who am I? Ko ai au, ko tirana, rawa ko airana, te tura ko ai wai. My ancestors came from Scotland and Ireland to Aotearoa five generations ago. Five to four generations ago, I te puake o ki Oamaru. So I grew up in Omas, and that's the last time I was in a radio station when I was at Waitaki Girls.
Wow.
Doing the Saturday morning sessions. I te taha o te awa o Waitaki. So I grew up going camping up the Waitaki Valley along that river. And so I know that space really well. But ke te noho o ki te roto pātiki. Now I live out in Mackenzie Bay. Mm. I went to Melbourne for 15 or so years, lived in Japan for 4 years, but I'm back in Dunedin now. My ko tangata tiriti te iwi, so I identify as tangata tiriti in recognition of the importance of that relationship with tangata whenua. And I think that's probably my journey towards understanding that has been coloured by living outside of Aotearoa for such a long time and coming back and going, oh, how come we haven't got it yet? Like when I was learning about it the first time around 25 years ago, I could see the massive gaps in our relationships. And then I left and thought, Aussie's pretty bad at this, race relations stuff. And when I came home, I was really shocked that we hadn't progressed to the point where I thought we might have.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of who I am. My family is pretty much still in Oamaru. My 96-year-old pop still lives there. My parents are still there. My sister's up there with her kids. And so my families are Sutherlands and Scholes and Eastons and Murrays and Browns. So they're all sort of, they've
good
a lot of them have
names.
Been farming families.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good farming
names. Yeah. Yep. Irish and Scottish. And so that's kind of what I bring with me into the mahi that I do now.
All right. So why Dunedin?
I think probably it felt like coming home, but not in a way that perhaps going to Oamaru might have felt, which might have been akin to Is it appropriate to say I would have felt strangled if I'd gone back there? When I lived there up until the age of 17, it felt really small. Mm-hmm. And so as an adult, I still think it is. And I can totally see the value in that for raising children. But also I don't see the value in it for myself.
Right.
So we're
coming
close enough.
From Melbourne. What's the value of Dunedin coming from Melbourne? Are there any similarities?
Well, I think part of the beauty of Dunedin is the student life, you know, like the student perspective, the student energy that gets, you know, that comes alive in February.
Yeah.
The potential that, you know, this place swells with. Even though a lot of the media focus talks about, you know, how terribly they drink on St. Patrick's Day, et cetera, et cetera.
They do hard thinking on other days
of
the week.
They're actually doing a lot of mahi
as
well. And so, you know, some balance would be nice on those days. And also maybe a few less broken bottles would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Or just some better cleanup afterwards.
Well, and that kind of brings us around to how we know each other. So we met about this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier, teaching in the same college.
Mm.
Tell me about the college.
So College of Personal Development and Wellbeing. I've been there. This is my fifth year at the Polytech. So my background with work includes a lot of youth work focus in Melbourne, mostly residential or family support work. Mm-hmm. And I've also been a primary school teacher and done a few other things like family court coordinator here before I went into the Polytech. And so I started in the Certificate in Health and Wellbeing, which is level four, started teaching that for a year. And then I was kind of part-time there and in at Kōkiri Training Centre. And then I moved back into a role in the Bachelor of Social Services with Health and Wellbeing. And then last year we rolled out the Diploma in Youth Work. And so this year I'm in my second year of delivering that. Mm. So each year has brought a new adventure in teaching, which is quite intense, but also fabulous because I'm constantly learning as I go because, you know, you can't teach without learning at the same time. So
what do you like about learning so much?
You're
on the front of it all the time and you keep choosing more change and more learning.
I don't know if it's my choice all the time, but it is what it is. I think what I love about learning is being wrong a lot, you know, and becoming comfortable with being wrong was something I sort of learned early in my youth work journey, I think. There was a mentor of mine in Melbourne would talk about the idea of unpacking whether you'd rather be loving or right. When you're interacting with young people, like, is it really important to fight this battle or do you just want to, you know, be okay with whatever they believe at this point?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, I think that sort of set me up for my love of learning is that I'm really okay with being wrong a lot of the time. And I enjoy it because it helps broaden my perspective.
A lot of people don't like being wrong.
A lot of people hate it.
Why do people hate being wrong?
I don't know. I think, is it connected to ego and, you know, have they grown up in families where being right gave you the most power? Mm. And so is it about a battle from childhood? I don't know the answer to that, to be fair. But it can be really hard to, encounter in the learning space when people aren't, you know, like they've actually entered into a learning agreement and are unwilling to think about different perspectives. That can be really hard.
That resistance is hard to come across and hard when you do come across it.
Mm.
I think resistance is, I mean, it's just a sign of fear a lot of times, I think, because what happens when you're wrong?
Mm.
You get plunged into the unknown.
Mm.
And that can feel pretty unsafe for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that connects in with what's happening at the moment, I guess, around racism, titidity, learning about how to be in relationship with tangata whenua as tangata titidity. You know, I feel like there's a lot of fear around what happens if we do.
Oh, I'm so afraid of getting it wrong.
Mm.
And I don't want to get it wrong. I want to be a good, helpful ally. And that's terrifying that I could be really offensive or miss the mark entirely or just unknowingly trample all over stuff, which I must have done in my life because that's kind of part of living.
And we will keep doing it, right? Because we keep trying to get it right. And I think the key is to keep trying.
Yeah.
I think, you know, really recently I got something quite wrong and it kept me awake at night thinking about how wrong I'd got adherence to tikanga. So I had not acknowledged tangata whenua in the way that I should have in a particular experience. And I was just horrified with myself for not greeting them with the mana in which I hold them. And eventually I had to forgive myself for that mistake and let it go so that I know that next time I might get it righter.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to get everything 100% right.
No.
You know, like that's part of the learning journey.
And there is value in getting it wrong because that is the next step towards getting it a little bit more right.
That's right.
It's hard. It is so hard. And I think especially with a background in education, I personally come from like a long line of people being like, this is the way it's done. And if you don't know, then what are you doing leading? So this idea of putting yourself out there and making choices in the spotlight, which sometimes you are even in lecturing, you know, you've got an audience there. How do we model getting it wrong with dignity and with humility?
And that's just about opening ourselves up to being vulnerable, isn't it? And actually sharing those experiences and not hiding with the shame of them so that nobody learns from it.
Yeah.
And so I absolutely in class talk about my mistakes because, you know, if they're not a great teaching tool, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and if we can't model mistake making, how can we expect our students to do that?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many people that don't want to try just in case they get it wrong.
Mm.
And that fear and that perfectionism, I think, is rampant in society at the moment.
Mm.
What do you think?
Well, I guess it connects not just to education and learning, but also to youth work in general and other social services and reflective practice. You know, the ability to look at what we get wrong, not just noticing that we got something wrong, but actually unpacking it, not being afraid of being wrong, because wrong's actually just a perspective anyway.
Mm.
You know, like there's no, this is always going to be wrong. In some circumstances, particular choices might be more right.
Yeah, and this so is as right as we could be at the time.
Yeah, so actually being able to talk about different perspectives and unpack what it means for next time is the point of having people around you, isn't it?
Well, I hope so.
Mm.
Yeah, it should be, or it can be. That idea that our colleagues are our mirrors in a lot of ways. They can help.
Yeah, and being brave enough to chat about the things we stuff up.
Yeah, and brave enough to talk about those really uncomfortable conversations, like what's happening in our society or what's happening on the news and going, actually, I don't know this. Tell me more.
Yep, and asking naive questions of people you trust enough to, you know, not be cast aside because of your ignorance. But
there's a lot of trust in learning. Mm. Like if you think about the trust you have to earn from your students or from people you're working with in youth work, where do you think that trust comes from?
I think it is about being open to being to conversation. The trust comes from openness. And the recognition that in youth work and indeed in education, actually if you can't trust someone, how do you learn from them?
Yeah.
How can you believe that they're doing the best they can for you or with you?
And they wouldn't be able to take anything of what you say if they didn't trust you.
Mm.
Why would they even consider anything you have as new knowledge for them?
Yeah. In order to be somebody that you can be to be trusted, you have to really consider, you know, who the students or the young people are in front of you, what their backgrounds are, what their needs are, and do your best to meet them and support them to meet their own needs.
Yeah. So what mahi do you care about at the moment and why does it matter to you?
Well, I chose to be in youth work. or the teaching of youth work, because, you know, as I said about, you know, the race relations side of Aotearoa, it feels like we're still not further enough ahead with our young people and the way they fit or the way that they're viewed in society. And so being part of educating people that work with young people to, you know, value their voice, funnily enough on the radio, but, you know, value their voice, value their perspectives, value their journeys, because, again, media, you know, highlights by leaders of particular parties that suggest that boot camp is the answer for young people absolutely horrify me. Like, how can everyone not know that that is not the right answer?
That actually we can't make people behave better by making them feel worse. Like, it's just the most illogical.
Yeah, well said.
Ugh.
We just can't do it that way. I've already been through boot camp. That's been their childhood. So let's give them a loving experience that helps them understand a different perspective in the world.
Yeah, a secure attachment to jump off from, a safe place to explore from.
People that care about them and understand the impact of trauma and intergenerational patterns of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some really interesting, fantastic young person you know.
Oh, well.
You probably know a few.
The funny thing is that they're actually not that young anymore, because neither am I. So I did a lot of my youth work when I was young.
That makes sense. That makes you a relatable figure.
I still think I am, even though at Electric Avenue Festival, a lot of people thought it was really great to see people of my age in the crowd dancing. It was horrendous. And also lovely that they felt I was friendly enough to say that too. And also horrendous. Anyway, what was your question?
Young people that are amazing. Do you know some? Or did you know some?
As I say, they're no longer young. But actually, I know lots of great young people. But in particular, I can, you know, one of the young people that I worked with in Melbourne, who's, you know, now a mum of two fabulous kids, you know, when I think about her journey from her childhood through to, you know, where she's at now, you know, she constantly inspires me. And I think about, you know, how I interacted with her as a youth worker and how I learnt much more off her than she did off me. Mm-hmm. And yet she still sees the value in having somebody on her side, you know, and that was enough. That was what she got, I guess, from our relationship. And unlike a lot of government-funded roles, you know, some NGOs and some spaces in youth work encourage real-life relationships. And so, you know, like, I still know where this young person is because we have a relationship outside of the sort of confines of government-funded youth work roles.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a pretty cool thing about youth work, is that there's so many diverse spaces to interact with young people, whether it's, you know, at one end of the spectrum where you work with heaps of kids who are from really fabulous backgrounds and they go on to do amazing things, or you work with kids who have had, you know, really challenging backgrounds and then you interact with them more individually and then they go on to do fabulous things. You know, there's such a spectrum of mahi to be done.
Tell me a little bit about the agencies that exist in Dunedin.
Hmm.
Where do we go for youth work and what kind of youth work is offered here?
Well, there's some really cool organisations that work in this space. In fact, I've just been hearing about, you know, young people that come in and do radio shows, which is fabulous and I didn't know about. So there's another thing. But, you know, Rock Solid's got a number of youth workers who support young people in schools and after-school programs. We've got, you know, Mary Youth Services that do counselling and alcohol and other drug work. We've got Otago Youth Wellness Trust that work really hard to support young people to continue engagement in education, as well as do a myriad of other work. Te Hauora Whānau Services, which works kaupapa Māori framework and works in sort of the youth justice space. Now I'm going to feel like I'm forgetting heaps of great places, but Southern Youth Development, formerly Malcam Trust, work with groups. So does Youthline. They go into schools. They do their, obviously, they do telephone counselling as well. CCT, Community Care Trust.
There are a lot
CBCT.
Of options.
There's heaps of spaces that work with young people. Okay. And then there's Mana Rangatahi. And last year there was a pop-up for Youth Week. A bunch of different services got together to enable young people to create a space for Youth Week that sort of highlighted some of the agencies that are available for young people, as well as themselves and, you know, the kinds of things they want to see in their community. So there was, like, really cool art. We bought a picture. Some really inspiring young people in that leadership space as well.
It sounds like you're just so passionate about our community that you just really want people to engage and be a part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah, I just think we need to value our young people and the potential that they have to offer our communities.
Young people get such a bad rap.
Right.
And I think it's ridiculous because if you look at, like, what they were saying 30 or 40 years ago or 100 years ago, it's the same thing. Mm. Oh, the younger generations, they're up to no good. Mm. They're so much trouble. You just think, when did this ever start being true?
Yeah, the expectation of storm and stress. You know, that theory was 100 years old, 120 years old. But, you know, it's not true, and it's not necessary that we need to look for the stress and storm in young people's lives. We can look for the potential and the joy that they experience in their lives. And of course, they go through hard days because I don't know about you, but I do too.
It is such a human thing.
Yeah, right? And it's just human nature. It's not just adolescence. It's, and having said all of that, there are particular things that we can do to support young people who have experienced adverse experiences. Mm. You know, we can help build their resilience by offering support in particular ways. And if we were better at that as a nation, the outcomes would be better for all. It's not just about the young people, right? It's about the young people and their connection to community and their contributions.
And looking for what's good in people and asking what they have to offer, what they're excited about. I think that gets vastly neglected when it comes to young people. We'd rather they were just quiet, or complaining about something is what we expect. But, whose idea is that? Whose expectation is that?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not impressed.
Not mine.
Not ours.
Not mine.
Not ours. I like the young people.
Yeah.
Because we're so old.
Yeah.
So what difficulties are sort of presented to you in this sphere at the moment?
In the teaching space or in the youth work space?
Oh, both.
Oh,
or either.
Yeah, I think I guess one of the challenges I encounter, sort of internal conflict for me is the idea that we want to, really support youth workers to have a broader understanding of different ways of supporting young people and different ways of encouraging and enabling young people. And also, wouldn't it be ace to pay them really well?
Oh, how good would that be if people got paid well to do such an important job?
Such an important job. And yeah. I think often about, the residential services of Oranga Tamariki, for example. Mm-hmm. The youth workers in those houses are dealing with young people who have really challenging backgrounds and therefore sometimes really challenging behaviours. Mm. And we are not paying them the same as what psychologists get. But their mahi is potentially a bit damn harder because they're not doing an hour a week. No disrespect for psychologists. I get that psychologists are important. But for the other 23 hours, who is uffying and supporting these young people? And why are we not recognising the absolute value of that?
Absolutely. Mm. I would also just go into bat here for teacher aides.
Absolutely.
You just think about how much extra work is put on these people at basically minimum wage.
Yep.
And you think, totally. Wow, we expect you to have an expert skill set to deal with some really
challenging
disorders and behaviors and circumstances and
no qualification, no recognition of the value of that pay.
And a lot of those people are really, really educated, and it's still not getting acknowledged in their pay scale. Mm. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. It's very sad.
I just think, and it is, I guess it's trite to say, but, you know, if we're not putting our money into the young people, what do we expect the country to look like in 20 years? Like, where are we putting our money? Because what's going to happen?
Yeah. Where is the generational change going to come?
So I guess we need to flip that script and go, okay, ideal world.
Mm.
What's changing? What's getting better? What are we working towards?
Without being political about it, I really think that, you know, the emphasis on supporting children, families, and young people could have some amazing payoffs long term. And it's just a real shame that we constantly change government and so therefore change tack, change direction without letting something take its course for 20 years to see the benefits. And then, you know, and then it's just a blame game about, you know, at what point it went wrong. Was it during their reign or their reign? It's ridiculous.
It's not about anyone in particular. It's about a system that just switches over and is about selling itself. And they have to get back to attention. Oh, we're the right ones. You're the wrong ones. If they're going to keep their jobs.
Yeah, yeah. And then it goes back to being right, doesn't it? Would you not rather have great outcomes than be right or prove someone else to be wrong?
It's a completely different way of looking at the world, though, isn't it?
And
I can't really imagine, because I have been really lucky that I have never had to work in a sphere that, well, it does change tact, but I sort of see sitting in a classroom in itself, you know. Yeah, you can't control the winds, but you can adjust your sails in that very small space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not much of a vision, though, in terms of, like, the big idea of what we can do for this country across the Motu.
Well, I think the wind is changing and the sails are being set differently by lots of different groups. You know, I think about, you know, decolonization and how there's an emphasis on supporting rakatahi instead of, you know, I mean, of course, as well as young people in general, but, you know, really highlighting the fact that we as Pākehā, as Tangata Tiriti, have done such a bad job of supporting these young people for such a long time that all the effort in the sort of decolonization space can't not have benefits. Surely we can. Well, but then again, that goes back to the political.
But there's a lot of hope in that. There's a lot of hope in that. And I think that, I don't know about you, but I'm seeing some incredible young people coming through and some incredible leaders. And I'm like, okay, you take over. You know what you're doing.
I'm following you. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly.
And we see them in our classes at the college. Mm. You know, we see change makers come through our programs. And yeah, and there's nothing I can do except sort of uppie them from behind and, you know, really encourage that journey for them all.
It's such a privilege to watch people, just step into their own and go, wow, you don't even know how powerful you are. Off you go. Do what you have to do. You've got our support.
Yeah. And maybe we were part of, you know, tilling the soil for that seed to grow, or we were part of the seed, or we were some water or some sunshine when they needed it. But, you know, like, whatever's growing from there, we'll never know. And that's, again, part of what I love about teaching, I think, and youth work. Actually, you have no idea what sort of impact you could have long term.
It's pretty exciting. And there's actually nothing more gratifying for me than hearing back from somebody and just letting me know how they're going and where they are and if they're excited about something life. In their life. And usually they get in touch because they are excited about something in their life. So that's really cool. And that's you never awesome. Know what someone takes away from you. Yeah.
That's for sure.
People are good sometimes.
People are good, aren't they?
I like people sometimes.
Need more of them in government.
Yeah, more of those good people. So what do you think you're looking forward to this year outside of work?
Wow. Is there such a thing, Adrian?
Is there a life outside of work?
Is there such a thing? One of my goals for the year is to sleep more.
Oh, I like sleep.
Yeah, aging is hideous. It's not. Aging is a beautiful thing. It's denied to many. So I know that I need to pay more attention to my sleep requirements and That would be good.
I hope you have a lot of joy in that.
Yeah.
Sounds like it just sounds hard.
You're
busy.
Hard.
You're a busy human.
I think busyness is the bane.
Are you going to any other gigs this year? Who are you looking forward to hearing?
I think there's music coming up this weekend, but I haven't actually got any plans for more music. In fact, I didn't know that I was going to Electric Avenue because I'd forgotten that I had a year and a half old ticket to my friend.
The gifts of a pandemic, eh?
Yeah, wow. So no, I don't have any gig plans. I do have a trip planned up to Matakana at Easter, so that's exciting.
Tell me about that. Where are we talking?
Oh, my bro's up north of Auckland, so we're going to Matakana and maybe jumping on a boat and going out to some islands somewhere. I don't know. The plan is unknown
amazing.
By me.
Is your brother just a little bit like that? Is your bro just
I don't know
bit
whether it's my bro relaxed? Or my sister-in-law that's planning this whole trip, but I'm leaving them to it.
Adventures up north.
Adventures are good. Yeah, yeah, with my nephews. So who knows what Easter's going to look like. And really, I don't plan much further ahead than that. What other one-year plan? Maybe read a couple of books.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's ambitious.
Yeah. It's the balance, isn't it? Do I read or do I sleep?
Yeah.
Read,
which
sleep,
one?
Read, sleep.
And then I read chunks of books or, like, sections of books, but I don't think I've read a full book cover to cover since I started this job.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So at Christmas time I was away. I was in the UK, and I made a concerted effort not to pick up my screens and actually work my way through some books. And there's nothing better than the Christmas holidays because I don't think about work just for that wee period of time. And when I get through three or four books, it makes me feel really alive, like I used to love reading growing up. And so I think screens have sort of robbed that from many of us.
Yes, I think
you know,
you're right.
Small chunks of information pollute our brains in a way that takes up space for longer effort. So yeah, so if anything, I'd like to read more books this year.
So what's a good recommendation from one of your books this summer?
Lessons,
what was a good one?
Lessons in Chemistry?
Lessons in Chemistry?
History of Chemistry?
History of Chemistry.
I think it's Lessons.
So you want us to read about chemistry?
No, in fact, I do not. And that is what people think. But it's actually about a woman who is who's a chemist. And about her life and feminism, and it's actually a really exceptionally well written book. I wish I could tell you who it was written by.
We'll
but
find out. Later.
I don't retain
we
stuff like that, right?
Fantastic. Well, let's change direction for a little bit.
Sure.
Do
where
you have
are we
any
going
questions
now?
For me? Oh. It's unrelated question session.
Oh.
So yeah, take you off the spot and see if you've got any random questions or on the mark questions if. Something.
Ah. I mean, your history in teaching at secondary level, what do you think the biggest shift has been for you jumping into tertiary?
Oh, so the biggest shift for me going into tertiary education and leaving behind secondary school is not having to talk about what students are wearing. I'm serious.
It sometimes maybe no.
Was
no,
a ridiculous amount of time and focus put on ensuring these young people were wearing the
looked
uniform
the
right.
Yeah.
And there's this great thing called the broken window theory, whereas if you're fighting about the little things and you keep the small stuff tidy, the expectation is that everything sort of works out better, that you choose the level of conflict you have. And if you have a level of conflict at uniforms, then you're not having a level of conflict about resistance of learning.
Mm.
But I love that I don't have to police what people are wearing.
Mm.
And that gives a huge amount of freedom
to
let people be who they are and to just say, okay, and now we learn. And here we are, and we're just doing that. And I think it is kind of insane that even our most progressive high school in the city still has a uniform.
Yeah.
Because I grew up going to public schools in Canada.
Yeah.
And there was no such thing as a uniform.
Mm.
And I see the point of a uniform, but I don't see a point of a $400 blazer.
No.
I don't know a single family that has teenagers that needs to be spending $400 on a blazer. Mm. It's not helpful.
Absolutely.
And I don't understand why we expect it.
Mm.
So, I mean, that seems trite, but it's
no,
a big philosophical
really
switch for me.
Mm.
And I think the other thing I've really noticed is that I'm not needed so much emotionally.
Mm.
And that's really nice. Mm. I was tired working in high schools, and it was hectic. Mm. And I'm not saying that this job isn't tiring or hectic at times. It certainly is. But when I was expected to have 120 conversations with 120 individuals in a day,
mm.
I loved it when I was young. And I got to a point where I just couldn't keep up without it really ruining my health. And I would be up at night worrying about different conversations I'd had. And that happens less frequently in tertiary education.
Yeah.
Also, I really like that I can just be like, go read this book, and they will.
Mm.
Or read part of it.
Or maybe they don't.
Or maybe they don't, but they okay pretend too, they right? have, yeah, and that's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think they can tell that we know that they haven't read it?
I don't know. I think I got through a lot of a university degree having read parts of books.
Well, I think that's the difference for me teaching in vocational, you know, teaching at Polytech versus having gone to university in a number of different settings. I went to three different universities. And the difference in relationship at Polytech is remarkable to me. So
it's amazing.
Even when I did a graduate diploma in adolescent health and welfare at Melbourne Uni, it was a small class. I still didn't have the kinds of relationships with the lecturers that we promote in Polytech. You know, it's about, you know, for us to know them as learners, they need to actually know us as human beings, as people, rather
it's
than
so
lecturers.
So good, eh?
Yeah, it's one of the beauties, I think, of vocational education is, you know, the focus on who they are, who we are, you know, and the combination of that as opposed to 300 people in a psychology lecture.
I don't think a lot of people want to be anonymous,
you
know, and if they did, they'd learn online. And lots of people do, and lots of people are anxious and decide to go that route.
Yeah.
But if you're signing up for education, don't you want to be seen and to be heard and to be known?
Yeah, especially in social services. You know, like if you can't manage a relationship in a classroom for, that's learning about social service, it's going to be challenging for you to have relationships in the real mahi of social service,
that's
right?
That's a really good point. Mm. It is sort of a learning tool in itself, isn't it?
And if you're not great at it at the beginning of your degree, you know, accept the opportunity that it presents, right? Mm. Like that is why we go into education, to get better at stuff.
Relationships can be learned. Mm. I mean, this is the thing that I think so many people miss, that actually we can get better at being relatable lecturers. We can get better at being reliable friends. We can get better at communication. These are – it's a skill set we can learn.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, some people are just naturally gifted. Like myself.
One in the room. Yeah, if you like people, you like people, and that makes it easy. And if you're naturally curious, that's an easy way to connect with people.
Mm.
And if you're not, there's room for learning.
Mm, totally.
And that's all good.
Yeah.
Hey, I've really enjoyed having you in the studio with me today, Kieran, and I know you were a little reluctant, so thank you for coming along.
Thanks, Adrienne. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Didn't hurt as much as I thought it was going to.
Fantastic. I'll see you next season.
Kia ora.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.